News with Nick, July 2nd, 2015. It is 6:44 in the morning, and I got about an hour to record before I need to put some clothes on. I am completely naked, and I need to get out to work because we're trying to build a new website. And here's how new website building goes. They're like, okay, looks like we can probably get your new website out by April. And I go, cool. And they say, just kidding, May. And I go, cool. And they go, just kidding, June. And I go, why? They're like, we had some backups, like some issues. And I'm like, okay. And they're like, how about July? And I'm like, wow. So everyone at work's pretty mad because we've been like, where's the new website? And I've been like, I don't, it's not ready yet because the company we're paying is going super slow. And here's the other thing they did. So they're trying to write this store plugin for us so that people can go online and order the stuff from the store. Now, I go and try to order the stuff from the store, and I'm trying to test the system, let's say. And I go, I wonder if I can adjust this little value here. Not logged in as an admin, right? Just as a normal user. And can I trick the system into thinking that the price of this is negative $1,000? And I go, bleep, yes. Add to cart, negative $1,000. So now I've got a negative $1,000 cart, and I can add like all sorts of other things to it, and it still doesn't charge me. And I can put the order through all the way. And I alert them, like, these are programmers, right, for the internet. They should know about, like, not messing stuff up. So I alert them to it, and they go, well, it doesn't look like anyone would think to do that. I'm like, yeah, well, that's not the point, right? If I was able to hack the site... And I'm not a very good hacker thing. I don't know. I'm not some kid that's 14 with his mom that has time to be hacking North Korea all day long. If I was able to figure out what to do to make my cart negative $1,000, anyone can. And so we need that fixed. So I reported that like a month ago, and it finally just barely got like resolved yesterday, which like Sunday is supposed to be the day we turn the site on, and I'm like, no, if it's getting resolved yesterday, we still need like testing time. It's a real mess, guys, and it's all gonna be my fault in the end. So that's news with Nick about the work situation. Let's see, we got a whole lot of things going on this week. I haven't done a news with Nick in about 18 years. So we're going to need to catch up. We're actually not going to catch up. Anything that you missed in June, you're going to have to read about on your own. I recommend looking into biker wars in Texas. Like, we thought there was going to be a huge biker war. I was ramping up. I got my flags ready, my Crips and my chains. What are the biker gangs? The chains? The chains, the, like, brakes and the tires. Those are the different motorcycle gangs. No, there was this shooting in Texas, and it was all weird because the cops were like, oh, there was started to be a brawl inside, and then it spread to outside, and then there was a big fight, and then you look at the security camera, and it's like there was no brawl inside, and it was outside, and maybe the cops started it outside. Who knows? I didn't really look into it, so you should do that, and then send me your podcast of what the news on that biker gang was, because then after that shooting, I heard that the news kept saying, we've got news that more biker gangs from across the country are suiting up to come to Texas, and they're just going to ride here, and then it'll be a huge all-out war. By the way, like, all bikers must be, like, 60 and retired, right? Some of them are retired cops, by the way. They're like, I don't like being a cop. Or, I mean, I'm sure they liked being a cop, but they're like, I'm a retired cop now, but I still want to beat people up, so I'm going to be a biker, right? Well, the biggest news was these two guys that broke out of prison. And basically, the news story is they were close with this seamstress. I think we talked about this on a show, but there's been lots of updates since then. They were close with this seamstress. They got some hacksaws and some sledgehammers. Who knows from where? They're saying probably from the seamstress, and they hacksawed and billy clubbed and slam dunked out of their sledgehammered out of their cells. And they did it once the night before they actually escaped. They actually went through the hole, went through like the underground, and then found this manhole cover and poked their heads out and said, "Oh, this manhole cover's way too close to like a residential housing or something." So they went back in, went back to their cell, and then the next night they tried a different manhole cover, although I don't understand, because the whole plan of this escape was that the lady was going to pick them up at the pop-out location. So what do they mean? What does this guy mean by they tried one, didn't work, they were going to try another? Did they have enough time between day one and day two to tell the lady to go to the new pickup location? There's some things that are just not coming through. And unfortunately, I don't have the guy here to interview. So, spoiler alert, they caught both of the, well, they quote-unquote caught both of the escaped prison guys. One of them got shot in the brains while he was apparently, like, carrying a shotgun. The cops saw him. They yelled at him, "Put down the shotgun." He didn't put it down. They shot him. So he's gone. Now, the skinnier one was apparently spotted on the side of the road unarmed. He started running, right? This other, park ranger, I don't think it was a park ranger. Man, I'm dumb. Anyway, Border Patrol agent, starts running after him, chasing him. It's a foot race. And then the Border Patrol agent looks far ahead and sees that the skinny guy is going to start running into the woods. And if he runs into the woods, he might lose track of him. So he pulls out his gun and shoots him. But doesn't kill him. So he's caught, and he's in the hospital, and he's been able to tell the stories.
The former fugitive says he and fellow inmate Richard Matt nearly escaped the maximum security prison the night before on their dry run, but decided the first manhole they reached was not secluded enough. Sweat telling him.
Yeah, that doesn't, like I said, that doesn't check out. Why would you say we almost escaped on the dry run when the live run was supposed to be the time that the lady picks you up? And then again, if you didn't catch the story, the lady didn't show up to pick them up because the plan was this lady goes, picks them up. They drive back to her house, kill her husband for some reason. I don't know why that has to be a pit stop. And then they drive to Mexico from New York. Basically the furthest you can get from Mexico because it's upper New York. And then they were going to drive to Mexico from there. But why would you say we almost escaped the night before? Because your ride wouldn't be. I don't know.
Investigators that Joyce Mitchell was supposed to pick them up and drive to West Virginia before heading to Mexico.
There were occasions where he heard the helicopters.
Wiley telling NBC News, Sweat and Matt often tuned into AM radio while on the run, continuing to change directions as they moved toward Canada. Sweat says he and Matt were very close to being caught several times.
The sheriff's deputy vehicle had pulled up in the vicinity of where they were, and they were somewhat surprised. And he said Matt fell backwards and you know, made some noise, but the sheriff's deputy didn't locate them.
Wiley,
what? They're like hiding. They're hiding in the bushes, peeking out, and there's a cop there, and one of them's about to sneeze, right? And the other one has to put his finger under the guy's nose so he doesn't sneeze and alert the cop that they're just in the bushes.
Also telling NBC News at one point, Sweat said authorities were combing the forest floor while he was hiding in a tree stand used for hunting right above.
What? No. What if this is his final joke? Like, I got caught. I'm just going to play the one final joke. I'm going to tell them that they were close. Like 20 billion times. That one time I was hiding in a tree looking down and they ran right under me. Another time, like, they ran through a door and I was propped up, like, above the door frame. Like Bugs Bunny is holding myself up.
Of them. This is, we are now seeing, a graphic image of Richard Matt moments after he was shot. The photo shows Matt lying on the ground.
Well, you can't see that, obviously.
A gunshot wound to the top of his skull. Meanwhile, CNN learns the inmate started planning and may have started cutting through the prison walls 6 months ago. The scrutiny intensified on the correctional facility as a dozen employees are now on administrative leave, including prison executives like Superintendent Stephen Rossette, who initially led Governor Andrew Cuomo on a tour of how the convicts broke free.
Okay, so a lot of the employees are now in trouble because they let some inmates out, which makes sense. Now, wouldn't it suck if like you spent 4 months like cutting through the wall and you're like, man, this is a lot of work, but I can definitely tell we're making progress. And then they're like, you're switching cells. They're like, oh, no. I wonder how often you have to switch cells in maximum. Was it maximum? I'm not even sure. All right, well, that's that. He's in the hospital, and news is they're not going to be doing any more interviews with him at this point. They have all the information they want, and he's probably going back to jail to sit in solitary confinement for punishment. Here's a related story.
Told me he had no clue Christopher McNeil had escaped Brown Creek Correctional Institute.
A completely different prison and a completely different guy.
Early Saturday, he found out online, even though the prison is steps away from his home.
Not a single vehicle, not a single bloodhound, not a blaring megaphone or...
The story is another convicted murderer escaped from prison with the help of a correctional officer with whom he was having sex. Again. This time the drama unfolded in North Carolina. Christopher McNeil, 29, scaled the wall of Brown Creek Correctional Institution. Early Sunday residents recognized him Sunday night from his photo in media reports and called authorities who picked him up as he walked along U.S. Highway 52. Oh. He didn't stay free. That's why it's not a... story.
The town crier or anything.
Today, Polkton police told me that's because they knew McNeil was already headed out of the area. Investigators say he scaled the fence and got into a car with corrections worker Kendra Miller. It's not known where they went next, but McNeil was captured just before 11 last night near the Davidson County line. Neighbors told us they saw U.S. Marshals at Miller's Hamlet home Saturday.
I don't understand. This is the dumbest story. So he escaped, got into the correctional worker's car to escape, but then he was picked up walking on the highway. What, did they get back to her house and, like, have a fight? She was like, put on some good clothes. And he's like, this is all I have. I just got out of jail. She's like, fine. If you don't care about me to put on some good clothes, you can take a walk down Highway 52. And then they put him back in jail.
It's just like a spring up, and you got New York, now you have Anson County.
Public safety officials say in the last year, no Brown Creek employees have faced charges. But in 2013, in a less than a month span, one guard was arrested for selling marijuana, and another for trying to give an inmate a cell phone. In 2013, the director of the North Carolina...
These guards are not that great either. The problem with policies and the problem with places and rules is that people have to work in them, right? And if you're a person, you still want to do things that aren't like, you're like, okay, yeah, I'm a guard, but sure, I'll sell your weed or your heroin. Orange Lady is the new black lady. That's the name of that show, right? Well, anyway, I guess if you want to get out of jail, just have sex with the guard. On Friday, we had some news that was like, gay people can now get married. Obergefell versus Hodges was a landmark United States Supreme Court case in which the court held that the recognition and provision of same-sex marriage is a fundamental right guaranteed by the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution. Let's read the 14th Amendment for all of you guys that don't know. The 14th Amendment says... Oh, it's too long. All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privilege or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor does deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protections of the laws. So, they're saying that because of that amendment, that two same sexes have to be allowed to be married. Or, decided on June 26, 2015, the ruling requires all states to issue a license to marry between all people of the same sex, and it requires all states to recognize same-sex marriages as validly performed in other jurisdictions. And this all started in 2013, when these two guys got married out of the state of Ohio and then came back into Ohio. And Ohio was like, no, you can't. You're not married. You can't put one person as, like, the beneficiary of the other person because you're not married or something. And they were like, what? We're going to sue. So they sue. 2 years later, they finally win in Supreme Court, and then all the fairies and the rainbow people go in the streets and go, yay! We're extremely happy. Okay, well, so you're allowed to get married. I don't know if, I guess, I haven't heard anything like that you're in trouble if you're a church and you don't want to marry a same sex. That would be insane if that was the rule. And I don't think there was anything in the Supreme Court decision about, like, being a pizza parlor and having to, and having to serve pizza at all of the gay receptions. Because if that was true, that'd be stupid. Otherwise, who cares? You shouldn't be married anyway. Because that's just like telling the government, hey, I want to sign an extra piece of paper with you so that you have more leverage over me on taxes or whatever. I don't know. Who knows? So, all the same sexes can get married, apparently, in every state. This happened yesterday in my state, New Hampshire.
Changes for anyone who lives in or drives to and from New Hampshire. Starting tomorrow, the state is going hands-free. News Center 5's Pam Cross is live in Salem, New Hampshire, with what you need to know. Pam?
This is going to be good because I don't know the law, so let's figure out what the law is. Okay, guys, you didn't see that. So it was like, okay, Pam has the what you need to know. Let's go over to Pam. And they cut to Pam, and Pam is just standing there smiling for literally like 4 seconds. And then she starts talking.
What you need to know, Pam.
2, 3, 4.
Put down the cell phone if you're behind the wheel, especially if you need to hold it, and absolutely no texting.
Yeah, I usually don't text and drive. Maybe
they're interviewing some 18-year-old.
A red light here and there, but it makes the road safer, and that's what's most important, I guess.
Call it tough love behind the wheel. Marilyn Bachman helped push the new hands-free law. Her husband, John, a retired fire chief, was killed 18 months ago while at the mailbox, the driver accused of texting.
What? If you're at the mailbox, just watch out. My mailbox is right on a busy street. I'm always looking out for a big semi, and I'm ready to jump into my yard if one comes.
Less than a second. That's just amazing to think about that, how a life can be taken and many lives are never the same again.
In this case, the driver acquitted, but distracted driving linked to about 9 deaths each day in the U.S. Now in New Hampshire, no talking on cell phones, using GPS, or anything that requires data entry.
For your safety, please stay alert to changing road conditions.
You can.
Okay, wait, what does that mean? So I've got a GPS thing up on my screen, up on my windshield. I'm not allowed to type in a GPS location. This includes stopped at a red light. I don't know how to get anywhere anymore.
And use Bluetooth or devices that are hands-free.
And don't think being stuck in a traffic jam will help. It's illegal to read, write, or...
It's illegal!
And don't think being stuck in a traffic jam will help. It's illegal to read, write, or post, even if you're stopped at a light.
Read, write, or post, write or post, that's the same thing. But how do they know if I'm reading, right? If I've got my Facebook in my hand and I'm scrolling it and it's below a thing, is it illegal to look down at my hand? How do they know if I'm reading Facebook? They can't prove that I'm giving you a ticket for reading Facebook. And most people are just going to be like, yeah, you're right. I was reading Facebook. I'll pay it. Man, it would be so fun to go to court and be like, I don't know what your evidence is that I was reading Facebook. I saw him looking down. There was a glow on his face. Is it illegal for me to hold a flashlight into my eyes while I'm driving? I don't think so. Actually, it probably is, but I don't know.
Fines range from $100 to $500. Enforcement could be tough, but...
it's actually written into the law that if the cell phone is held in the proximity of your ear, you are presumed to be using that cell phone. So the law would apply
Crap.
In that case.
So you think hands-free, the way to go?
Absolutely. 100%. Absolutely. And anybody that's caught doing it, there should be consequences.
Anyone caught doing it, there should be consequences. All right, let's read the law. No person, while driving a moving motor vehicle upon a way or temporarily halted in traffic for a traffic control device or other momentary delay, shall use any handheld mobile electronic device capable of providing voice or data communication, including... oh! Shall use any handheld mobile electronic device capable of providing voice or data communication. Now, hang on. My GPS does not provide data communication, I don't think. It gets satellite information so that it knows where it is. I guess that counts, maybe. But it's not trans... crap. Including but not limited to reading, composing, viewing or posting any electronic messages, or initiating, receiving, or conducting a conversation, or initiating a command or request to access the internet, or inputting information into a global positioning system or navigation device. Crap! I can't legally use my GPS anymore without I have to pull over, I have to type the thing in, I have to drive. And now sometimes the GPS does this thing where it pops up like in the next turn and I don't want to see it, so I have to click it to get out of that screen. Let's see. Sorry. Or manually typing data into any other portable electronic device. An operator of a motor vehicle who holds a cellular telephone or other electronic device capable of voice communication in the immediate proximity of his or her ear while such vehicle is in motion is presumed to be engaging in a call within the meaning of this section. So, you can't be tricking the cops. They wrote that in. Like, don't hold your phone near your ear and try to trick me into pulling you over and then say, no, look at my call history. Nope. Apparently, you are getting arrested. B. Driving, for the purposes of this section, shall not include when a person is behind the controls of a vehicle that has pulled to the side of or off the road at a location where it is legal to do so. Okay, so pulling over is fine. It shall not be an offense under this section for any person driving a motor vehicle upon a way. All right, so here are the exceptions. A. Make use of a cellular telephone or other electronic device capable of voice communication to report an emergency to the enhanced 911 system or directly to the law enforcement and agency, fire department, or emergency, blah, blah. So you can call 911. To use one hand to transmit or receive messages on any non-cellular two-way radio. So you can talk into CBs. You can talk into Marine Band. You can talk into your Toys R Us walkie-talk. C, to use a Bluetooth-enabled or other hands-free electronic device or a similar device that is physically or electronically integrated into a motor vehicle for such a purpose to send or receive information provided the driver does not have to divert his or her attention from the road ahead. As used in this section, hands-free electronic device means any mobile electronic device that has an internal feature or function or is equipped with an attachment or addition, whether or not permanently part of such by which a user engages in conversation without the use of either hand. Provided, however, this definition shall not preclude the use of either hand to merely activate, deactivate, or initiate a function of the phone. So, the point, I believe, of that is that if you have Bluetooth, you're allowed to touch your phone to accept a call, right? Any person who violates this section will be guilty of a violation and fined $100. For the first offense, $250 for the second offense, and $500 for the third offense, or more, third or more, within 2 years. That's it. So, no using the devices without wireless. Well, now, is my... It says Bluetooth-enabled or other hands-free electronic device. So I have a headset that I can plug into my phone and just talk. That's hands-free, even though it's not Bluetooth, right? Yeah, that should be fine. That should be fine, except my GPS thing. That's going to be a real prob. I just guess I can't type into my GPS while there's a cop near me. He's going to be looking for it. Here we got a great story. A teenager suffering from a phobia of toilets has died from a heart attack. Emily Titterington, age 16, died after going 8 weeks without a bowel movement, which left her with a compressed her chest cavity and displaced organs. An inquest in Turo, Cornwall, what is this, not in the U.S.? Who knows? Heard that Emily's life could have been saved with appropriate medical treatment, but she had refused medical examinations. Home office pathologist Dr. Amanda Jeffrey said her symptoms were in keeping with a condition known as stool withholding, which is more frequent in children. A post-mortem examination revealed the 16-year-old had a massive extension of the large bowel, like nothing I've ever seen before. It was dramatic, the doctor says. Emily, who had autism, of course, had suffered with bowel problems for most of her life, but doctors had been unable to determine the cause. So, this is, wait a minute. Emily collapsed while at home in Cornwall on the 8th of February 2013. Paramedics attempted to revive her, but she was not. Well, this is strange. Why is this story posted on July 1st, 2015, when this happened like 2 years ago? Guess it's just coming out now, because now she would have been 18, so it's okay to talk about it. Oh, goodness. Okay, so don't hold... I can't believe this is happening. Don't hold your bathroom.
Cats will do anything for the irresistible.
I'm closing that. Don't hold your bathroom things when you're on vacation. You'll end up with a heart attack. TSA spokesperson tweets photo of $75,000 found in luggage. The internet gets angry. Let's see if there's going to be an ad.
Hi, would you like to have a life skill through which you can create a high monthly income by...
Sure. Uh-oh, something happened.
At the airport, what do you pack in your carry-on? Maybe your computer or some clothes?
Maybe your wallet? Well, the TSA says a man stopped at a checkpoint, was carrying $75,000 in cash, and the TSA kept it as he boarded his flight.
Tonight, our Shelby Brown tells us why they were allowed to keep all of that money and what the passenger is going to have to do to get his money back. Shelby.
It seems TSA may stand for Tweeting Savings Account after the agency's public affairs spokesperson Lisa Farbstein tweeted a photo of a passenger's cash-stuffed luggage, along with sending the photo of what she said was $75,000 in a suitcase. To her 1,700-plus followers. Wait, the TSA only has 1,700 followers? Or is this like... Yeah, that's weird. Her Twitter account is TSA Media_LisaF. And she only has 1,700 followers. Is this the main TSA Twitter account? I don't even know. Well, it isn't unusual for the TSA to tweet or Instagram photos or weapons of or explosives found in people's luggage. Her tweet caused many people who saw the photo to argue that it was a clear invasion of the passenger's privacy because they were tweeting a photo of something that wasn't illegal, necessarily. It was just a bag of money, And they're like, you have a bag of money in 20s? We're keeping that.
Well, Candace, it is a process, but you know it all began when that traveler was passing through a checkpoint here at the airport. The alarm went off, and then the TSA agents just couldn't identify what was in his bulk.
The alarm went, the cash, the $75,000 in cash alarm went off.
You know, it all began when that traveler was passing through a checkpoint here at the airport. The alarm went off, and then the TSA agents just couldn't identify what was in his bulky bag. So, of course, they had to open it up. That's when they hit the jackpot. They found $75,000 in cash. It was a discovery so odd that someone from the TSA tweeted out a picture of the bag full of cash. Bundle after bundle, stacks of cash fill up a passenger's carry-on bag at RIC, a bulky bag that left TSA agents wondering what was inside. The passenger, who was checked out by authorities, was not charged and given clearance to continue flying.
Yeah, so they were like, oh, that's strange. Let us hold this bag for you. Oh, but don't worry. You can catch your next flight. Don't worry. It'll be fine. We'll just hold this bag here of all of the money you've ever had.
$1,000. Is this how you would transport it?
Well, I have to wonder if it's all real, to be honest. I wonder if, you know, it's fake or how.
Here's an interview with a random person in the airport. What do you think of $75,000 in a bag?
Half of it's fake. Or my second thought is he's a middleman for some sort of deal going on. It's just that's very rare to have someone travel with that amount of money.
An airport spokesperson says the money was turned over to an unspecified federal agency. It's now part of a continuing investigation.
Great.
This amount of money is the
CBS 6 News.
Oh my God, that guy looks insane. That's Willy Wonka, I think. He just got out of the shower. His hair's down to his chin, flowing.
Legal analyst Todd Stone says there are statutes allowing the government to seize large quantities of cash that are questionable.
The fact of the matter is there's laws that deal with reporting cash and over $10,000. There's also laws that deal with, you know, reporting it to the IRS. And so the theory is that when someone's carrying this much cash, they're trying to evade those laws.
What are the odds the passenger will ever be reunited with this cash again?
Or the person who owned the property has to come to court and explain why it's lawfully held.
What?
And
that's
if he
so
doesn't
dumb.
Do that, then it gets forfeited to the federal government.
That's insane. So there's no law against having $75,000. There are laws against certain reporting levels of cash, and they say, oh, but if you had this much money, we think probably you're trying to dodge some sort of reporting, which maybe you are. I don't know. Maybe you are a drug dealer.
Of course, that remains.
Who cares? But then you have to go to court and say, and they say, it's like they take your car and they're like, you could have been using this car as a getaway car. You could have been using this car to haul weapons from Mexico to those two guys in jail in New York. Now, explain to us how you weren't doing that. I don't know. Like, I guess you could go in and say, yeah, this $75,000 is money I made my whole life. I just kept putting, like, $1,000 a week into, or I don't know, $1,000 a month. Or a week, or a day, who cares, into a shoebox, and now I just want to fly with it. Just to see what would happen. No, I don't know. And are they going to believe you in court? Or are they going to be in court like, no, we want to keep the money, we don't believe him.
To be seen. Again, the TSA stressed that this man was not considered a risk to the flight safety of others. Again, he was not charged with anything. For now, we'll send it back.
Yeah, okay. But the TSA is a risk to his shoebox of money. Or maybe he sucks and he was going to kill people with it. Who knows? Got to keep an open mind. It could have been anything. All right, guys, we have a few more minutes. This happened. On the evening of June 17th, a mass shooting took place at the Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church in downtown Charleston, South Carolina. So this has started a huge race war in America, basically. A man who walked into the church. He went to a Bible study, right? There were 12 other blacks, plus him. He's white. He goes to Bible study, spends an hour praying with these Bible study people. And then he goes, you know, what I'm going to shoot you all. All right, so let's see. At around 9.05 p.m., the police department responded to calls of a shooting. A man described as white with sandy blonde hair, around 21 years old, and 5 feet 9 inches in height, wearing a open fire with a 45 caliber handgun on a group of people inside the church. For nearly an hour prior to the attack, the shooter had been present and participating in the Bible study. A total of 13 people attended, including him, so 12 blacks and him. The shooter asked for Pinckney? Was that the pastor? Sat down next to him, initially listening to others during the study. He started to disagree when they began discussing scripture. Eventually, he stood up and pulled a gun from his fanny pack. Don't trust any man with a fanny pack. Eventually, he stood up and pulled a gun from a fanny pack, aiming it at 87-year-old Susie Jackson. Jackson's nephew, 26-year-old Tywanza Sanders, tried to talk him down and asked him why he was attacking churchgoers. The shooter responded, "I have to do it. You rape our women, and you're taking over our country, and you have to go." When he expressed his intention to shoot everyone, Sanders dove in front of Jackson and was shot first. So the nephew dove in front of the grandma, was shot first. The suspect then shot the other victims, all while shouting racial epithets. He also reportedly said, "Y'all want something to pray about? I'll give you something to pray about." He reloaded his gun 5 times. Okay. Sanders' mother and his 5-year-old niece, both attending the study, survived the shooting by pretending to be dead. I don't know. Let me look up this gun. 45 caliber handgun. This isn't a revolver, right? It's a normal, like, magazine-fed gun? Yeah, it looks like, probably. I'm not even sure. We'd have to ask Puke on that one. But here's the thing. How many, like, does he have extra magazines? He probably even does, but even so, okay. So I guess if you've got extra magazines, you can probably reload that gun in, if you've practiced it, if you're really good, you can reload the gun in 2 seconds, right? If you're not really good, you can probably reload the gun in 6 seconds. But that's only if you had extra magazines, which I would assume he would have. There's no way he's carrying, like, loose bullets. And then he's stopping at the church table and then putting them in. It's a Pez dispenser, basically, is how bullets go in, right? There's no way he's putting them back into the magazine and then shoving that back into the gun. He would have had to have extra clips or extra mag. I don't know what the difference between a clip and a magazine is. Who knows? All I know is video games. And all I know that when Andrew's shooting, he just fills his guns with Cosmopolitan magazines and just shoots dildos out of it. Okay, shouldn't have said that. Where were we? Okay, so yeah, he reloads 5 times. I mean, you gotta, like, one of the times he's reloading, you gotta be like, I have to hit him with something. Because otherwise I'm dead too. Let's see. Dot Scott, president of the, her name's Dot Scott, said she had heard from victims' relatives that the shooter spared one woman. Oh, sorry. Dot Scott wasn't there. But according to her report, the shooter spared one woman, so that she could go tell other people what happened. He asked her, "Did I shoot you?" She replied, "No." And then he said, "Good, because we need someone to survive, because I'm going to shoot myself, and you'll be the only survivor." Because he thought everyone was dead, because there was the 2 people that were pretending to be dead. So it was him and her left. He goes, "Did you get hit?" And she's like, "No, I'm good." And he's like, "Good. I'm going to spare you. You need to go tell other people what happened." It's like in 300 or whatever, when that one guy got his eye cut out, or he lost an eye, so they sent him back to go tell the story of the 300. You'll be the only survivor. The shooter then allegedly turned the gun to his own head and pulled the trigger, and then realized he was out of ammunition. So how would you not know that you were out of bullets? So he tries to shoot himself. He's like, "Oops, out of bullets." So he left the church. Several hours later, a bomb threat was called into the courtyard, complicating the investigation and prompting an evacuation of the immediate area. That's a strange side effect. The attack was treated as a hate crime by police, of course. I don't know. Who cares? I mean, he shot a bunch of people. And at 10:44 a.m. the morning after the attack, he was captured at a traffic stop in Shelby, North Carolina, 245 miles from the shooting scene. And police received a tip-off from a woman who recognized Roof driving his car because this guy, like, he shot a bunch of people and then he was on the news. It's like, oh my goodness, look at him. He's free. We don't even know where he is because he didn't shoot himself in the head and make it easy for us. So he ran. But everyone saw him on the news. They saw him driving his car. He gets pulled over. He gets, arrested. I'm dumb. Let's see. A police received a tip-off from a woman who recognized Ruth driving his car, which was a black Hyundai Elantra with South Carolina license plates and a three-flag Confederate States of America bumper decoration on U.S. 74. Recalling security camera images taken at the church and distributed by the media, she later recalled, "I got closer and saw that haircut. I was nervous. I had the worst feeling. Is that him or not him?" She called her employer, who contacted local police, and then tailed the suspect's car for 35 miles until she was certain authorities were moving in for an arrest. Weird. 35 miles. That's a long time. That would take, like, 40... That would, like, depending on what road you're on, obviously, it could take 45 minutes to an hour if you're in, like, residential roads. Although he was on a highway, so I guess it probably only took, like, half an hour or 45 minutes to follow the car for that long. At the jail, his cell block neighbor was Michael Slager, a former South Charleston officer charged with first-degree murder in the wake of his shooting of Walter Scott. Oh, goodness. We got two stories colliding. Is this the guy that... This is the guy that was in the field and then started running off. His cell block neighbor is the cop that did that. According to unconfirmed reports, Roof confessed to committing the attack and said the purpose was to start a race war. He reportedly told investigators he almost didn't go through with the mission because members of the church group said he had been so nice to him. Oh. Now, the lesson here is that if you're going to do a shooting, grow your hair out like Justin Bieber and then cut it when you're done. They never would have found him if it weren't for that haircut. She says, as I got closer and saw that haircut, I was nervous. I had the worst feeling. Yeah, never would have known. But this whole thing has started this it's really started a race war. An African-American church in South Carolina that was burned down by the Ku Klux in 95 caught fire again Tuesday night, though authorities said it was too soon to tell if arson was behind the latest blaze. Black churches have been burning throughout the South since the Charleston mass shooting. The fire at the Mount Zion African Methodist Episcopal Church in Greenland broke out at a time when federal authorities are investigating blazes at several other predominantly black churches, but so far the fires don't appear to be related. I don't know, maybe it's anonymous. So in the news, they're saying all these black churches are just starting to burn for some reason, so we got that going for us. Wow, I had a weird dream I just realized. I don't remember what it was. It was something related to a cross and, like, Christmas lights. And like putting the cross on the lawn with Christmas lights for some reason. I don't think I remember the purpose. Like, it was going to be for a joke, but it wasn't going to be like for like, it wasn't supposed to be a joke for like, oh my God, a lit up cross. I mean, that was part of it, but there was something deeper than that. There was supposed to be like some symbolism, but in my dream state, maybe it made sense, and I don't remember now. All I remember is there was a cross and Christmas lights. But now everyone is like, oh my goodness, this kid, he had pictures on his Facebook of him holding the Confederate flag. He really hated blacks. He really loved the Confederate flag. And little do you know, the Confederate flag, actually, probably not little do you know, the Confederate flag flies, like, literally in government places in the South. Nearly 2 weeks after canceling campaign events scheduled the morning after the deadly attack on South Carolina church Jeb Bush on Monday, called the Confederate flag a racist symbol reflecting the new Republican normal in the Southern primary state vastly altered by the racially motivated killings. The flag, he says, was one of the symbols that has divided the South in many ways. The symbols that were used in most recent modern history, perhaps not at the beginning of the time, but the symbols, perhaps not at the beginning of the time, but the symbols were racist. What? And if we are trying to lean forward rather than live in the past, you're trying to eliminate the barriers that create disagreements, and so I did, he said, explaining his decision as the governor of Florida to move the Confederate flag from the Capitol grounds to a museum. Then he applauded Governor Nikki Haley of South Carolina for doing more or less the exact same thing under a lot of pressure. So basically, there were these Confederate flags flying at state capitals or state grounds, and these governors, all of a sudden, because of this kid's shooting, is like, no, no, no. I mean, it's like June 23rd, 2015. I think the Civil War has ended. Let's get rid of that Confederate flag. It's really insane. Everyone's the level of like bandwagoning. It's like everyone goes, oh, the Confederate flag, I'm offended. And then the politicians are like, oh, I'm offended too. I've been offended for years. And finally, I'm sorry that I haven't gotten around to doing this, but the Confederate flag is racist. I've believed this my entire life, and I'm going to be taking it down. Apple reinstates select games with Confederate flag. Apple on Friday reinstated a number of games recently stricken from the iOS App Store for bearing references to the Confederate flag, a polarizing symbol that some equate to slavery in America. And I don't have an opinion on that, by the way. I don't know if it stands for black slavery. I don't know if it stands for states' rights. It probably stands for a little of both. Now the states wanted to be free to have black slaves. Oh, you know, I don't know, okay? Everyone's going to say their thing. People are going to be like, no. The Civil War was all about just being free as states. And other people are going to be like, no, the Civil War was about southern states wanting to hold black slaves. And it was probably both, right? So, but I don't think a flag means anything. If you want to fly a Confederate flag, fine. If you want to fly a racist flag, there's plenty of racist, you could fly a flag with a noose on it. And that would be racist, even though more than just black people have died to the noose, right? But that's just the symbol of killing the blacks. If you're walking through the woods and you see a noose, you expect a black to be nearby, ready to be offended. Ultimate General is back unchanged, the developer said in a blog update. After several late-night calls with Apple yesterday, the game has returned to the App Store the way it was in 1863. So basically, Apple looked through their apps and said, oh my goodness, we've got some Civil War apps going on, and in these Civil War apps, there's a Confederate flag. That's racist! Take it out. Dukes of Hazzard has been pulled off of TV Land. The network has pulled episodes of Dukes of Hazzard from its schedule, spokesperson for TV Land confirmed Wednesday. The network would not comment further on whether reruns of the series were pulled due to the inclusion of the 1969 Dodge Charger known as General Lee, which has the Confederate battle flag painted on its roof. I've got to look this up.
Images.google.com. I'm going to go
Dukes of Hazzard car. Yep, the Dukes of Hazzard car has the Confederate flag painted on its roof. And so TV Land has pulled the Dukes of Hazzard off of TV because it's got this racist flag on the roof. I guess we can never watch this show again. Weird coincidence. At work yesterday, I saw a flyer that was like, because every 2 months or so, we've got our potluck, and I got to bring in some meatballs, and everyone looks at me and goes, oh my goodness, I can't believe Nick did something. So I look at the theme for next month's potluck, and it's like Dukes of Hazzard potluck, bring in your favorite southern dishes. Like, oh my goodness, that's extremely racist. Luckily, I live in New Hampshire, and we only have one kind of person that's not all the way, like, pure. All right, this has been News with Nick. Can't watch the Dukes of Hazzard anymore. And don't go through the TSA with money, no matter what you do. Just put it in bits, Bitcoin. They don't know what to do if they open a bag and there's just like 1,000 Bitcoins. They're like, oh, what's this money? But it's not money. It's just all these bunch of QR codes fall out. Like, oh, okay, that's, you know, a man traveling with 75,000 QR codes. I don't know. He's trying to avoid laws and pay for drugs with QR codes. Because that's what a Bitcoin is, right? It's a QR code. All right, guys, let's play this as we get out. Thanks. You can join our PCL. I don't know what that was, actually. You can join our PCL at pukeinthegang.com/VIP. Actually, you already have. So thanks for joining the PCL. Thanks for listening to News with Nick. And I'm sorry that I haven't done one for months. I'm a big lazy. And that's it. Bye.